You're listening to Idaho Matters. I'm Gemma Gaudette. Idaho is approaching the one-year anniversary of the first confirmed COVID-19 case in our state. Now, over the next couple of weeks, Boise State Public Radio will consider how the state has handled its first pandemic in more than 100 years and how it's changed all of our lives. And we want to hear from you. How has your life changed this last year? What lessons have you learned about yourself, about our community, about work, your health? We do want to hear your stories. So leave us a voicemail and we may use it on the show as part of our 1 year of COVID in Idaho reporting. So here's the number to call and leave us that message, 208-426-3625. Again, that is 208-426-3625. Or if you have our Boise State Public Radio app, you can record an audio message using the Talk to Us feature. So today, we're checking in with Idaho Department of Health and Welfare Director Dave Jepson, who has led statewide efforts to battle the coronavirus for the last year. Director Jepson, thanks so much for coming on the program.
That's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So let's start with the fact that the state is now in its fourth month of vaccinating Idahoans. So, I mean, for several weeks now, we were one of the worst states when it came to the number of doses that we were receiving from the federal government. So are you seeing improvement there? And if so, what do you think has made the difference in us moving up the ladder like that?
Yeah, thanks, Jim. That's a great question. There's two parts to that. One is, of the doses that we're receiving in Idaho, are we doing a good job of getting those into the arms of Idahoans who want to get vaccinated? And there are numbers indicated that we were struggling early in the pandemic. But over the last month or so, we've actually done quite well. And in fact, we were in the top 10 last week for number of doses received versus administered. And I think that's really been a function of great partnership with the public health districts and those enrolled vaccine providers. The governor obviously issued his executive order directing providers to get those first doses into arms within 7 days, along with the transparency website. And I think that great work by those vaccine providers has really paid off. And now Idaho is one of the best states in the country at getting doses into arms of those that want it. And that's based on the number of doses that we're receiving.
So right now we're still in the phase where people who are 65 and older are the priority of getting vaccinated. I mean, as you know, this is a massive group of people when it comes to Idahoans. And we have heard so many stories from people who are frankly frustrated as they try to sign up to get the vaccine. I mean, you know, people spending hours online or on the phone, oftentimes not getting an appointment. So here we are in the top 10 of states getting vaccines into arms. But what is the state doing to make this process for folks who are over the age of 65 smoother and frankly, maybe go a little bit faster?
Yeah, unfortunately, the main driver of that is that we are receiving far less vaccine than we have demand for in the state in general, and certainly in the 65 and older group, which then causes that need to stretch out appointments over time, and thus the frustration that you're talking about. And I hear from people, from those over 65 all the time about the incredible frustration it is to call multiple phone lines or visit multiple websites multiple times a day, looking for that appointment that may be open and trying to get on there before anybody else. And we recognize that that is not the experience that we would like our citizens of Idaho to have. Mm-hmm. As a result of that, we actually are planning to launch later this week a state registration tool that is really meant to ease that frustrating process. And I'll just give a quick high-level overview of that and happy to answer more questions about it. But basically, that'll be a place that citizens can go and they can enter their information. Hey, I'm Dave Jepson, and here's my age, and I have this underlying health condition, and I live in this zip code or this address. And that list will be a registration list of saying, I'm interested in getting vaccinated. And then providers will then come to that list when they have appointments that are open up and pull names of people who are qualified. So right now that would be 65 and older, to then reach out and schedule those people for appointments. And so basically we're giving a place for people to go to say, I want to get vaccinated. As provider appointments open up, they'll reach out and grab those names and the zip codes around them, reach out and schedule them for appointments.
Okay, so when this tool comes online, like you said, hopefully sometime this week, that it's not an actual appointment, but if people put their information in and they register on this website, then they will be contacted.
That's right. I want to be clear, we're not building a scheduling tool. That would take years and many tens of millions of dollars. What we are doing is providing a way for people to get on the list so that then providers can reach out and schedule them as they have appointments open.
Okay. So, Director Jepson, last week the department announced that folks will need to provide proof of residency or at least work here in our state to get the vaccine. Did that come because we had, what, close to 5,000 people get, or at least doses that were not put in the arms of Idahoans?
That partly from that, yes, we saw about 5,000 individuals who were non-Idahoans who'd been vaccinated in Idaho. It's quite possible those individuals are working in Idaho, and as we've indicated, living or working in Idaho qualifies to get vaccinated here. But what we were seeing is that, as particularly as Idaho was in the top 10 last week for efficiency at getting doses administered, that we were becoming more and more of a target of interest, if you will, for states around us who weren't doing as well. And so we wanted to set a policy in place that said, as Idaho has become much more efficient at administering these doses, we want to be clear that we're only allocated doses for those that live here. And so we're going to really focus, actually make it so that you have to live or work in Idaho to get that vaccine. We do want, regardless of citizenship or immigration status, everybody that's eligible, that lives and works in Idaho, is eligible to get vaccinated when it's their turn. And I also want to be clear that the homeless population will be in the next group that opens up, and this will not impact their ability to get vaccinated. But we were seeing a large interest developing and people wanting to come to Idaho to get vaccinated. And with the limited supply we have, we wanted to be clear that those vaccines were really for those that live and work here.
So what are the examples of proof of residency, or if you work in Idaho, that you have to provide to get the vaccine? Because I do think you bring up a good point with, especially with our undocumented workers, with the homeless. I mean, these folks sometimes don't have identification.
Yeah, that's true. And so we have left quite a bit of discretion with the provider community as to how they verify that information. Obviously, a driver's license, a work, or a school ID would be sufficient. But even a letter with the person's name and address, a utility bill, or a voucher from an employer, from a faith-based institution, from a healthcare provider, a school, or any other organization or agency that can sort of represent that the person lives or works in Idaho would be sufficient. We really want to be sure that the vaccine goes to those who live and work in Idaho, but for those that live and work here, we do not want to create an undue burden to show that they live here.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Do you see a time when the proof of residency or in-state work requirement might be removed?
You know, I would see a time. I think we will be later after we really get through the bulk of those that want to get vaccinated in Idaho and really move to a place where a demand really matches supply. That'll be much less of a concern. And in particular, we want to make sure that the states are in the closest proximity around us were in a similar situation. But I do see it. I don't anticipate this to be a policy that lasts forever on this vaccine. But while we have such limited supply and such high demand, that's when we wanted to put this into place.
Do you have any thoughts on the fact that, as you mentioned, you know, you found out that folks were wanting to come to Idaho might have easier access getting the vaccine? Because frankly, Oregon and Washington are behind us in what groups they are vaccinating. So in particular, Oregon. So does that potentially play into how 4,800 doses got into arms of people that were not living in Idaho or working in the state?
Well, again, I want to be clear, the 4,800 are people who don't live in Idaho. They may work in Idaho. We don't, that's not data that we were, is in our database.
Okay.
So it is possible that many, if not all of them, were working in Idaho. But we were seeing this, particularly as you mentioned, in states around us where we're vaccinating, say, teachers or those 65 and older, and those states are not, that there was individuals that would be, as you can imagine, highly interested in coming to Idaho to get vaccinated because they qualified on those criteria. And that was one of several factors we looked at as to why we put this policy in place.
So we know the science shows that vaccines, these vaccines are safe. At the same time, the state of Idaho, we have a vocal group of people who are anti-vaxxers. How concerned are you that a significant number of Idahoans may choose to not get vaccinated because of, you know, their beliefs regarding vaccines in general, not just this vaccine, but vaccines in general?
Yeah, that's a great question. It is something that we worry about quite a bit. And we've actually done some looking into that question to try to really understand what the attitude of Idahoans is towards not only just vaccination, but the COVID-19 vaccine. And what that research has shown is that there's about 60% of Idahoans who can't wait to get vaccinated. And that's the group, many of them you're seeing now being very frustrated trying to get appointments, unfortunately. There is a significant group, probably in the 20% range, give or take a few percentage points, of individuals who probably will never get vaccinated for COVID, no matter what we say do or what information is out there. And that leaves about 20% of the states who believe that vaccines work, but mainly say they want to wait and see. And the main reason that they say they want to wait and see is primarily around safety concerns. Now, as you just said, these are incredibly safe vaccines. Tens of millions of people now having received it with just hardly any major side effects, and very, very safe vaccine. But that they want to wait and see that that's true. The other reason they give is that they are worried about side effects. And so they want to see how their friends and neighbors and other family members fare as they take the vaccine. And so that'll be a group that we'll be focused on a little later in the year, is to help them be comfortable with the safety of the overall vaccine, be comfortable with the side effects, the very minor side effects that an individual might experience, so that they feel comfortable. Because the good news is, as they believe in vaccines, they really just want to wait and see that it's working out all right for those that they know.
Director Jepson, we know that all around the country, getting demographic data around race and ethnicity is spotty. And frankly, there can be significant discrepancies in getting COVID-19 vaccines to non-white communities. So here in Idaho, our state is not currently reporting vaccine data by race. However, it can. So when will that data be made public?
Gemma, that's a great question. And actually, the answer to that is today at 5 o'clock is when that data will be available. We'll be releasing a press release about that later on today. As you may know, we did not have the capability to capture that data, and just that functionality came online within the last 3 weeks or so. We've really wanted to make sure that data was had good integrity, that it was clean and it represented and was accurate of what was going on. And we plan to publish that later on today. I also just want to say about that a patient is not required to share their race or ethnicity information. However, an enrolled vaccine provider, if that information is shared, is required to report it on to us here at the state. And so we'll share what data we have, but you'll also notice when it gets published that there's quite a bit of data missing, and that's not because people forgot to record it. It's because it's dependent on individual patients agreeing to share that information.
So as we move forward through the different eligibility groups, I'm curious about how your department ensures equity when it comes to not just race, but maybe socioeconomic status, even health conditions on where these priorities lie in getting the vaccine to folks.
Yeah, that's a great question, and something we has been a key goal of our vaccination effort from the beginning. And there's lots of ways to define equity: rural versus urban, as you mentioned, economic, race and ethnicity, and those that may have health access challenges for whatever that reason may be. And as you mentioned, those that may have underlying health conditions that make them more at risk for a severe case of COVID. And so that is something that we've been very focused on. The first few phases were very precise. Healthcare workers, those in long-term care centers, which in some way were precisely because of that, as we wanted to keep healthcare capacity from diminishing, as well as our highest risk individuals were those in those congregate care settings, like such as long-term care centers. Moving through the age 65 and older, we do know that those who are at highest risk of severe disease and even death are those 65 and older. And so that was actually specifically made with respect to recognizing that and making sure that those that were at highest risk could have access to the vaccine. But what, as particularly as demand starts to catch up with, supply starts to catch up with demand, We're going to increasingly need to make sure that we have equity across the state for those who want to have the vaccine that they can do so. And actually the new vaccine coming out, Johnson & Johnson, and I'm happy to talk about that for a minute, may help us with that because it is a single dose refrigerated, which actually helps in some of those harder to reach populations.
I do want to get back to that in a minute, but we actually have some developing news coming into our newsroom right now. FEMA literally just sent us a news release, Director, to award $39 million in federal funding to the Idaho Office of Emergency Management. Now, according to the release, this would be to support as many as 5 vaccination centers here in Idaho. So I'm curious, as this is literally just coming into our newsroom, will you support this? And what can you tell us about this?
Yeah, we've been working very closely, hand in glove, with the Idaho Office of Emergency Management through the entire pandemic. And we are fully aware that they've asked for some FEMA funding to help with our vaccination efforts, which can be used for a variety of purposes, including mass vaccination clinics and other purposes to help get the vaccine out. And so, yes, we're working in partnership with them and are supportive of their request of bringing additional federal dollars in the state to help us get the vaccine out as safely and efficiently as possible.
So let's go back to the Johnson & Johnson vaccine that has now gotten emergency clearance to be used from the FDA. How do you see that potentially speeding up the process? Will those dates that we're looking at to possibly open up past the 65 and older, could that be sped up, or are we still looking at what I believe sometime in March, early April, where the next group is able to get the vaccine?
Great question. As you may know, over the weekend, the Janssen, or that's the subcompany, is Johnson & Johnson, mm-hmm. is the parent company, was approved, and it was shown to be very safe and very effective in preventing severe COVID disease, hospitalization, and death. So that's actually as effective on those dimensions as the current vaccines, which was very encouraging. Idaho is currently receiving from first doses about 40,000 first doses a week. And the Janssen vaccine, we will receive this week about 13,000 doses of the Janssen vaccine as well. We'll get the schedule for sure over the next few days, but we'll expect a similar amount, if not more, coming into the state going forward. And so what that really means is we can vaccinate now over 50,000 people first doses, and obviously with the Janssen, that's the only dose going forward. That's really up from when we started with just 15,000 doses a week, and will allow us to speed up the vaccination process. As we talked about earlier, the vaccine providers in the state have capacity to give more vaccines. So as more vaccine comes into the state, they have lots of capacity to get that vaccine out into individuals. And so this will speed things up and has the potential of us moving more quickly to the next priority groups.
You know, we know in the last year that our state's focus throughout this entire pandemic has really been this idea of personal responsibility, right? When it comes to things like masking up, don't gather with people outside of your household. We also know that a lot of people in our state did not heed that advice, but that also goes back to personal responsibility. As you reflect on the last year, I'm curious as to if you think personal responsibility is the right policy when it comes to a public health emergency.
You know, Joan, that's a great question. Our overall goal has been to preserve healthcare capacity and to keep the economy open as much as possible. And there have been things that we have issued through quarantine orders under the authority that the job I have has in the Idaho, as well as the governor's authority, such as limits on group sizes and requiring physical distancing. But we know that Idaho is a pretty independently minded state. It is so much more effective in that mindset for people to choose to do what's best for them and their families and their community. And so there's some risk at mandating things that actually works against you and actually has the reverse effect of what you desire. And so our approach has really been to respect an individual's right to choose and then do our best to educate and highlight why those things are so important, and specifically around mask wearing. And, you know, we had a large spike in December, but we started messaging much more heavily around mask wearing, and several of the local public health districts actually issued mandates on that. And we saw those numbers come back down. And so and looking back, I think that approach of letting people take personal responsibility has been effective for us, in the sense that it's that we haven't had our healthcare system overrun, and Idaho has the best economy in the country right now.
And I'm curious, though, because we also know that certain health districts have now taken those mandatory mask mandates away. And now it is, you know, highly recommend that you wear them. And here we are. We, as you mentioned, we've been on this downward trend. Our numbers have been going down. New case numbers have been going down. Hospitalizations have been going down. But yet we have these new variants coming out. So how confident are you that we are headed in the right direction? And will we continue to improve?
Well, we are in a race. We're in a race to get as many people vaccinated as quickly as possible, that of those that choose to get vaccinated. And that's a race against these new variants that we know are much more contagious. And so we continue to ask the public, as you just mentioned, to continue to follow those safety precautions. These new variants are much more contagious, and it's even more important now than it's ever been to follow that guidance of wearing a mask, physically distancing, hand washing, et cetera. And so we'll continue to ask that of the public. Even after you've been vaccinated, our guidance is to continue to wear a mask and to physically distance, at least till we get much further into the vaccination process. And so that'll continue to be our request. And we'll keep an eye on the numbers, as will the public health districts, and see if we need to take any further stronger guidance or actions.
I'm curious about what's kept you up at night during this last year.
Well, I've certainly stopped taking my afternoon nap, so that's
help you sleep better.
That's been one of the casualties. You know, it's varied through the pandemic, but probably the thing that keeps me up at night are two things. One is worrying about hospital capacity, and that was particularly acute in December when we were just dangerously close to running out of healthcare capacity. And then the other is actually just all of the incredibly negative personal impacts, including the many, you know, almost 2,000 people that have died in the state from this disease, and the impacts to their families, and really trying to work our way through of how best to respond in a way that minimizes those impacts to individuals and their families. So really hospital capacity and the deaths and the other impacts to people and their family.
What are you most hopeful for as we are literally less than 2 weeks away from that 1 year anniversary date of the first case here in Idaho?
You know, a good day for us was December 15th, when the first vaccine was approved and arrived in Idaho, because that is our best tool to getting back to normalcy, and our brightest hope of getting back to some form of normalcy going forward. And so that's been the biggest hope so far in the process, in this whole pandemic.
Well, I want to thank you so much for your time, Director. We've been talking with Idaho Department of Health and Welfare Director Dave Jeppesen. Really appreciate you coming on the program and talking with us.
You're welcome. Happy to.
And now we're curious about you. How has your life changed in the past year? What lessons have you learned about yourself, maybe about our community, about your own health care? We want to hear you, and we want to hear your story. So leave us a voicemail, and we might use it in an upcoming show that we are calling 1 Year of COVID in Idaho. Here's the number to call, 208-426-3625. Again, 208-426-3625, or download the Boise State Public Radio app and record an audio message using the Talk to Us feature. More Idaho Matters next.